Previously on We Live Here.
Anybody who drives down Manchester today or comes across from Barnes Hospital on Newstead or Taylor couldn't imagine what it was like then.
And I just liked what it was becoming before it became a great popular place now.
All of these wonderful new apartment buildings and nobody can afford to live in them. I couldn't live here because I couldn't afford it.
Hi everyone, it's me Tim.
And me Camille.
And in the background are about 150 of our friends and colleagues hanging out with us at St. Louis Public Radio for our house party.
Yeah, we had the party a couple weeks ago downstairs from the studio where we produce our show.
And it was an awesome night. Great conversations, food, drinks, of course,
and stories.
Yes. I mean, there can be no We Live Here event without stories, right?
Indeed. And we've been hearing for years that you guys want to hear more youth voices on our show.
So, drum roll. Tonight features all youth storytellers.
And we begin with Ray Reese.
She loves all sorts of subjects at school, math, presidential history, you name it. She's a Girl Scout.
And she is 6 years old.
Here is a story about the best day ever.
My name is Ray Lynn, and I'm going to tell you about my first ever concert. These artists are local from St. Louis, and they have a group called Kigos, and I found out about them on YouTube. When my mom found out that they were having a concert, she got me tickets, an outfit, and new shoes. But the week before the concert, I was talking and playing at school, and my mom said, no, you can't go. And then I was so sad because that was going to be my first ever concert. But then when my mom came home from work, she got me dressed in my concert outfit. And then when we pulled up to the Del Mar Loop, I said, where are we? And then she said, the Kigos concert, and I screamed really loud. And then I... And then when we went inside, I danced till Kigos performed. And then I had to sit on my mom's back because there was a lot of tall people. And then I fell on the floor and all of the confetti. And then when I got up, me and my new best friend Demi had a confetti fight. We threw confetti at each other. We even threw confetti at our moms. That was the best day ever.
Love that story.
And on today's episode, it's all about Camille and I stepping off the stage and handing over the mic to some stellar youth storytellers right here in St. Louis.
From St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, this is We Live Here, a show for people somewhere on the woke spectrum. We gave our storytellers a lot of latitude when it came to what they wanted to talk to us about. We just asked them, tell us something that reveals something about themselves.
And our next two young people have stories about how endings, sometimes painful endings, have revealed new beginnings and running themes in their young lives.
The first is from Sophie Horowitz, a sophomore at Parkway Central High School in West St. Louis County.
My story starts in March of 2008, about 3 months before my fifth birthday. It was pitch black outside, and my younger sister and I were getting ready for bed upstairs. All of a sudden, my mom comes to the bottom of the stairs and tells us to get dressed. My father was in the hospital. So we rush to the hospital, and we sit in this stark white room for, I don't even remember how long, until a doctor comes in. And a doctor says 3 words that will change my life forever. Todd is dead. 3 words, 10 letters, words so small, but had such a big significance on my heart and my brain. We all had so many questions. You know, how could this even happen? Nobody in my family was sick. We were all so young. How can my 37-year-old father suddenly die of a heart attack? As one might expect, my life changed pretty drastically after that night. My mom was a single mom for a couple years until she eventually remarried in 2011, I was legally adopted by her husband in 2012, and I now had an older brother who was 12 years older than me, so I was now a middle child, which is very different than being an older child. And all this happened before I turned 10 years old. I had different experiences than my peers. Instead of making Father's Day cards, I made sun catchers to put on my dad's grave. I had to explain why I had two middle names and why I called my dad Don. I also developed a large amount of anxiety and perfectionism and had a lot of unanswerable questions about life that none of my other friends had. But life went on, and I had my bat mitzvah. I graduated middle school. I had my first cup of coffee. I saw my first PG-13 movie. I started high school. I went to my first high school dance. I tried sushi for the first time. Had finals for the first time. And somehow, 10 years went by. So then this summer, I was given the incredible opportunity to go to Jewish sleepaway camp. And so as a Jew, one of the cultural rites of passage is going to sleepaway camp. And so most kids start when they're in middle school, but I was never really comfortable with leaving home, so I started in high school. And I found this camp in Warwick, New York, called Kutz. And Kutz is special for a couple reasons. So one, it's for high schoolers, so it's 10th, 11th, and 12th. And two, it's built around this class. So you choose this class, and you go throughout the summer, and then you can add on other classes, anything from Is God Real to Make Up with Val. And so I chose Action and Advocacy as my class. And so we walk in the first day of class, and my teacher, Lizzie Stein from the RAC, which is the Religious Action Center, gives us an assignment to find our social action story. I'm going to be completely honest with you. I had no idea what the heck my social action story was going to be. I had been a pretty verbal advocate, but I hadn't really been a physical advocate. I hadn't really done anything in the community yet. And that was because I gotten pretty overwhelmed whenever I started to think about it. You know, there's so many topics that you can choose from. You know, who do you reach out to? What do? What if nobody shows up, or what if nothing happens? And I always got this overwhelming feeling when I thought about it. So as she starts explaining the project, I start getting this overwhelming feeling again. But I worked through it, and I came up with a story about how the Parkland shooting affected me and how I felt safe at school. And while this is a very important story, and while gun violence prevention is something that's very important to me, it didn't necessarily have the personal touch and wasn't as passionate as I wanted it to be. But I went through the class, I stayed and told my story in small groups, and when she asked for volunteers for the larger group, I didn't really raise my hand. At the same time, I was struggling a little bit with the loss of my dad. So for those of you who haven't been to a Jewish sleepaway camp before, it's very touchy-feely. So think constant cuddle puddles, hammock sharing, cabin circles every night, journal circles till 1 a.m, best environment ever, but also very emotional, hippy-dippy, touchy-feely. So with all this constant love and support, I started to think about my dad a little bit more. I also start thinking about my dad a little bit whenever big monumental occasions happen. For me, grief never really goes away. It sort of ebbs and flows throughout your life. And when I experience large things, such as starting high school, my bat mitzvah, going to sleepaway camp for the first time, I start to think about him a little bit more. And while I had the most amazing friends and counselors and support system at camp, it's pretty hard to explain what's going on to somebody who's never really experienced it before, because it's a pretty unique thing. So one day, we were sitting in Pagoda Jacob. And so a pagoda is kind of like this hut, and it was made out of deck material, and there's a bench all alongside. So we're sitting in Pagoda Jacob, listening to a rabbi talk about modern-day priests and prophets. And I'm sitting crisscross applesauce, and it's the most beautiful day outside. The sky is blue, there's puffy clouds, the sunlight and the wind are streaming in, and my mind starts to drift off and think back to the couple of days, and it makes its way to my dad. And I remember that right after he had passed away, my mom and I had went to group therapy. So she went off with the parents, and I went off with the kids, and we talked about what things that were going on in our life and kind of processed our feelings, and it was really, really beneficial. And I started thinking, why isn't there something like this for teenagers? Because that would be very, very beneficial. And then my mind kind of goes to the next level, and it goes, what if I could create something that was like this? And then I get that overwhelming feeling again. You know, how would I even start this? Would anybody even come? And so I start to get this panicking feeling in my stomach. So I kind of push it down and focus on back on the rabbi. But then a couple days later, I was talking to my friend, and we were talking about what we were planning on doing after camp. And she had mentioned that she wanted to create a group for people who were who had loved ones who were going through cancer. And I was like, I have something like that. So I told her about my idea for a group, and she became very excited, which was exciting to me because I had never done something like this before. I didn't know how people would respond. And she mentioned that we should go meet with a woman called Pam Schuler. So Pam Schuler is the head and creator of a Jewish teen mental health organization called Here Now, which is based in New York. And so she was a visiting faculty member for that week. And she suggested that we meet with her and just kind of talk out what was going on and what she could help us with. And I was extremely nervous. Pam is one of the most inspirational, funny, hilarious, like just all around amazing person like in the entire world. So we set up our meeting and the day comes and it has been pouring down rain all day. So we're staying in our buildings because since it's like a camp, everything's outside. So we can't go outside because of the storm. And so we're late. And so along with all the other feelings that we're having, I am nervous because I hate being late. Like, I hate being late with a passion. I made my friends leave, like, our area that we spend for free time 15 minutes early so that we would get to dinner on time every single day. And while they complained about it, we were never late. So I just like to point that out. But anyway, so we get there and we're late. And so I'm feeling nervous. My hands are shaking. My heart is kind of pounding a little bit. And we get to the dining hall. We sit down on this old couch. And I tell her basically the basics of the idea. And she starts to smile. And my heart grows a little bit and gets very excited. And she says that she loves the idea, which I am astounded by because she's Pam Schuler. I mean, she's amazing. And so we start talking. And she said that not only does she want to help support me and creating this, but she wants to take it on as a part of Here Now. And she even suggested that instead of doing it in the St. Louis area or in the New York area, we do it across the country, so virtually, and we would all meet together. And I was ecstatic, to say the least. I'm pretty sure my friends still think I'm crazy for running down the gravel path, my arms flailing, screaming my head off because of how excited I was. And so camp starts to come to a close, and I realize that I never told my story yet. And so I talked to Lizzie, and I was like, I think I have something. And being the planner that I am, I spent a whole morning, you know, going over and over instead of working out, going over and over our story. And so we get to class, and we sit in this big circle, because we all love to sit in circles. And I start telling my story. And the response I got was inspiring. It was something I had never expected to hear or see, because these are the people who inspired me all summer. These are the people that I admired throughout immensely. And these are the people who were coming up to me and saying, this is a really, really cool idea, which was extremely motivating for me because now I feel the motivation and the inspiration to continue this even after camp when I'm not in this constant social action environment. So camp came and went, and we get home, and I have a couple of meetings with Pam over FaceTime. So we create Understood. And Understood is a virtual group for teens who have lost a parent, where we meet once a month and talk about anything. So sometimes we'll talk about, you know, anniversaries and what do you do on them, what to do when people say I'm sorry, or sometimes we'll just talk about, like, what movie came out this week and, you know, eat dinner and open up packages together. Essentially, it's a place where people come together who have a common similarity, understand really what you're going through. And so we're still looking for participants. So if you know anybody or if you yourself would love to join, I would love to have you. So feel free to talk to me or Pam Schuler at Here Now. You can find them on Instagram, Facebook, their website. We're still looking, so please come. But today, I wish that I could go back to that fateful night in March, and I wish I could talk and hug that little four-year-old girl. I wish I could hold her and be there for her to tell her that she can talk, that she can cry, that she can experience all of these hard and overwhelming feelings that are happening. I may not be able to go back in time, but I can still talk to that little girl. She's right here inside of me. And I can say that today she's not only overwhelmed with all this uncertainty and anxiety, but she's pretty overwhelmed with the feeling of excitement and the things to come and the connections to be made. Thank you.
Our next story comes from Raekwon Strickland, a 13-year-old aspiring musician who has plans to become a lawyer.
Good evening. Growing up in a musical family, I've learned to admire all the genres in music. Genres such as R&B to country. My dreams are to become a world-renowned musician, singer, and songwriter. I've been singing since I could talk, and I've been playing piano for about 3 years now. Not to toot my own horn or anything, but people say I'm pretty good. But people have always called me an old man because of the artists that I would listen to. Artists such as Patti LaBelle, Luther Vandross, Charlie Wilson, and the list continues on and on. There's this Patti song that I love singing, and it goes like this. Oh, if only you knew how much I do love you. Oh, if only you knew how much I do need you. I bet you didn't expect me to know that song. Thank you. Gospel is something that is very important to me because gospel has a lot of power and meaning to it, and gospel gives me strength, and it calms me, and it helps me to carry on. The old people would say, it's just like fire shot up in my bones. And there's this gospel song that I love singing, and I love listening to it, and it says, Through it all, I've learned to trust in Jesus. I've learned to trust in God. Through it all, I've learned to depend upon His word. And that helps me a lot during the times of struggle because 3 years ago, I lost my grandfather. My grandfather was a role model to me, and he was someone that I really looked up to. And he was a father figure to me for when I didn't have my own father in my life. And I can remember him making me laugh, the songs that he would have me sing out of nowhere. And I could remember the conversations that we would have as if they were yesterday, and the hugs as if time with him had never stopped. The night before his death, he called me and he said, "Hey Raekwon, you said I can have some of these chocolate kisses, right?" I said, "Yes, Papa, you may." I laughed because he called me around 8 or 9 o'clock at night for some candy. But I said, "Anyways, good night, I love you." But I did not know that last I love you would be the last I love you. The next day, my mother told me of his death. I did not want to accept it nor believe the fact that my grandfather and this big role model that I have had passed, and that he was here one day and the next day he wasn't. And for me, that was extremely hard for me because he was someone that I dreamed of having in my life for years and years to come. And I can remember spending nights thinking about him, dreaming of him, and just crying. And I can remember praying and singing those gospel songs and listening to those gospel songs. And those gospel songs are what gave me strength and courage and helped me to cope with his death. But not only did those gospel songs help me through his death, but a year ago, my aunt passed. My aunt had cerebral palsy disorder. So therefore, she relied on the help of others to care for her. I can remember hours that I spent with her just talking to her. Even though she couldn't talk or walk, I knew whether or not I could sing or not, or I could say something right or wrong due to her responses. You can see the joy in her eyes, the laughter, the happiness that she had. And I can remember my mother telling me what was going on with her body. And at that time, I did not know what to do, and I did not want to accept that that could be the possibility of her last days. I remember going home, and I cried, and I prayed to God to not take her. Please don't take her. And I can remember just singing those gospel songs and listening to those gospel songs and having hope and having faith. And a few days later, I went back to the hospital after I prayed for him to allow me to see her one more time before her passing. And I listened to this song that said, "The Last Mile of the Way." And "The Last Mile of the Way" says, "When I've gone the last mile of the way, I shall rest at the close of the day. For I know there are joy that awaits me when I've gone the last mile of the way." I listened to that before I walked into her room. And when I walked into her room, my granny, she sat next to my aunt, and she began singing "The Last Mile of the Way." I hadn't told anyone that I'd been listening to that song nor singing that song. So therefore, at that moment, I knew that music could have a connection between life and death. And music, especially the gospel, is what helped me to keep going and to cherish the moments that I had with her. And not only did gospel help me with my grandfather and losing my aunt, but not long after my aunt passed, my great-grandmother passed. My great-grandmother and I had a strong relationship. That bond could not be broken. I could remember going to her house daily after school, taking out her trash, taking care of the things that she needed me to take care of. And she tried to pay me, but I wouldn't take it because that's just certain things that a grandson should do for his elder great-grandmother. My birthday came, and she slipped a $20 bill in my hand. I said, "Now, Grandma, you know I don't need all that money." She said, "Well, child, you know you don't let me pay you for taking out my trash, so I'm going to give it to you for your birthday." I said, "All right, Grandma, but don't you dare try to pay me for taking out your trash." But I could remember the Sunday that all the reverends, ministers, pastors, the family visited her. On that day, she looked very busy, so I just came back later on that evening. And I knocked softly because I didn't know whether or not she was asleep. So I took out her trash and I said, "All right, I'll just come back and spend some time with her later on." But later on never came, because the next day, my mother told me Grandma had never woken up from her sleep. I went over to my grandmother. I saw that she was still breathing, but she was not woke. So at that time, I really didn't know what to do, because there were still things that I wanted to learn from her, and she taught me life lessons and spiritual lessons as well. And I could remember the family coming around singing those gospel songs. And at that moment, I saw how gospel was in the midst of every struggle and every sorrow that we had went through. And I saw how gospel gave us strength even when we were going through the loss of our relatives. And for me, gospel helped me to continue and to keep going. Gospel is what is the reason that I'm still here. And I can still say from then and now, through it all, I've learned to trust in Jesus. I've learned to trust in God. Through it all, I've learned to depend upon His word. Thank you.
Stick around, we have a little business. But when we get back, we'll hear from one more youth storyteller from our house party. Our final story comes from Sadhna Mateshwaran. She's 16 years old and a junior at Lafayette High School in West St. Louis County. She's also a classical Indian dancer and violinist.
St. Louis born, St. Louis raised, Indian born, Indian raised. From the moment I was born, these two have made up my identity. Yet growing up, I struggled to find a balance and a way to express these two vital parts of me. As a child, I firmly believed that there was a place where I could express and my culture and be an Indian and act as such, and another place where I was expected to act and fit into the American norm. As a child, I didn't believe that in St. Louis or anywhere in America, it was possible for me to express both these identities of mine at the same time and the same place. So, on the first day of school, of kindergarten, when the teacher called roll and pronounced my name as Sadhna, instead of Sadhna, I raised my hand and was like, yes, I'm present, and I didn't think to correct her. And when the kid next to me turned and said, so your name kind of sounds like Madonna, the singer, right? I was like, yes, you got it, buddy. There's no other pronunciation. And at that moment, as a 6-7-year-old, I didn't really see the need to correct my teacher or my classmate because I felt as if it was normal for them to pronounce my name incorrectly, as if it would be too hard for them. However, at that time, little did I know that this decision of mine to not correct my classmate and my teacher would impact me for the next 10 years of my life and be the reason that I started to take upon two separate identities. After that first day of school, I made it very clear to myself. At home, I was Sadhna, and at school, I was Sadhna. At home, I felt very comfortable and at ease in expressing both my identities. At home, I would watch Disney movies and Bollywood Indian movies with my mom. I would speak the Indian language Tamil and English. I felt it very easy to celebrate the holidays like Christmas and Thanksgiving and also Indian festivals like Diwali. However, at school, I did not feel this comfortable and I didn't feel secure and safe in expressing these identities of mine because of the fear of being judged. For instance, when my mom would pack me Indian food for school, I would try to cover my food and hide it and eat so that no one would see or ask any questions. However, despite my efforts, one day a kid saw and, in the words of a first grader, called my food inedible or yucky and gross. And at this moment, I felt very hurt, I felt judged, and I started to feel like I couldn't express my Indian identity even in subtle ways at school or outside of my home because I would be judged and I wouldn't be accepted by my friends or by my classmates, teachers, anywhere outside my home. So this really started to have an impact on me, not just in school, but also when I was at home. When my mom would say we have to go to the temple or we would have to go to an Indian event, I would wear Indian clothes. But when we would be driving through the neighborhood and I would turn and I'd see my friends playing outside in the neighborhood, I would duck because I was scared that they would see me and then they would judge me. And not only that, even when I wasn't at school and we would go to these Indian events, my mom would make me wear a bindi. A bindi is typically traditionally worn by Indian women and girls whenever they go out to places. And when my mom wasn't looking, I would take off the bindi and I despised wearing it. And it was all because of the thought and the influence of the feeling of knowing that I would be judged for being myself, for being Indian and expressing this identity. It was almost as if I wanted to deny a part of myself. However, I slowly overcame this when I got to high school. The beginning of my freshman year, I have a friend, and she was with me through middle school, and she told me, she's like, Sadhna, you can't do this anymore. You have to tell people how to start pronouncing your name correctly. Your name is not pronounced Sadhna, it is pronounced Sadhna, so you better do something about this. And when she said that, I was so hesitant. I was like, there is no way I'm telling people the right way to pronounce my name. I have gone like 8 years without doing so. I don't think there's any need to change it up on people. Like, I've gone to the school with these people from elementary school and middle school and going up to my friends and being like, hey guys, my name's not Sadhna anymore, it's Sadhna, like, you better figure out a way how to pronounce it correctly, just seemed very nerve-wracking to me, and I was almost scared to do it. So when she realized that I was not going to take initiative myself, she took it upon herself. We'd be walking through the hallways freshman year, and she'd be like, hey guys, this girl's name's not pronounced Sadhna, it's Sadhna, you better get it right, and I was was so embarrassed, but I'm really glad she did it because it encouraged me. It pushed me out of this fake identity I had created for myself, and it made me tell my teachers, my friends, the right way to pronounce my name. And when they started calling me Sadhana, I felt this burden lift off my shoulder. I felt it possible to keep true to myself inside and outside of school. This further realization and the happiness that came with keeping true to myself further hit me when, actually, earlier this year, I had the chance to perform at the Fox Theater. So I'm a classical Indian dancer, and my classical Indian dance team and I decided to take part in the Fox Teen Talent Competition. We made it through the preliminary rounds, we made it through the semifinals, and then we finally made it to the finals. We perform an Indian classical dance form known as Bharatanatyam, which has been practiced in India for many centuries. And we performed a piece known as Lasya, or the Grace, in which we express the elements of Mother Nature and her beauty and what she carries. And when we did this, we were able to make it to the finals, where we got to perform at the Fox. And the day of the finals, and right before we were about to perform, and right before the music started, I looked out onto the stage. I see thousands of people. It's basically a full house. And at that moment, I was overcome with this feeling that was surreal, to be standing on the Fox stage, to be performing here. And I was so overjoyed and overwhelmed by that. And it was the most prestigious stage of St. Louis. But later I realized that more than just performing on the Fox or standing on the Fox stage, it was that my dance team and I were the first ever classical Indian dance team to perform on the Fox. We were representing our culture, and we were giving the audience an insight into our culture, this art form that many have never witnessed before on a stage they've known so well. For the first time in my life, it was as if a merge of St. Louis culture, art, and history was being merged with my culture, art, and heritage. And this was something that would have been unfathomable to me as a child. Thus, my story has helped me realize why I love St. Louis so much. St. Louis has allowed me to embrace my identity. It has allowed me to realize it and celebrate it. It has allowed me to be true to myself and has shown me that hate has no home here and that people don't have to change themselves to fit in. And more than anything, St. Louis has given me a community and has become more than just a place where I live. Thank you.
There are so many people to thank for helping us host our house party at St. Louis Public Radio, not the least of which is our associate producer, Alana Sistrunk.
And we should say something real quick about Alana, because she is kind of the digital voice behind We Live Here. So if you are on Facebook or on Twitter or on Instagram and you're interacting with us, you're actually interacting with Alana. We should also say she's leaving us soon, so thank you for everything you did this year.
We should also say thank you to Leslie Davis from St. Louis Public Radio's events staff.
And Shafante Ross, who worked with our storytellers.
Greg Montenu, who ran all the sound for the evening. Daryl McQuinn and Dennis Bentley helped set up the tech.
And last, but certainly not least, Robert Peterson. He's the director of radio programming at St. Louis Public Radio, and you guys know he's our boss.
Next time on We Live Here.
It's not just about what disparities exist today in St. Louis, but how did we get here? And how are we maintaining where we are? It's psychological separation just as much as it is physical separation.
We Live Here is produced by me, Camille Stanley.
And me, Tim Lloyd.
And from St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, this is We Live Here.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.